Hello and welcome to another episode of Juicebox Music Podcast. I'm your host, Hunter McClamrock, and with me on the other line, there's an empty space that he's left behind when he's not here with me. It's Nicholas Moreau. What's up, Nick? How's it going?
What's up, dude? Dude, this is like the sweetest intro I've ever had.
Well, I knew I had to like really get your attention today because you just won't stop scrolling through Frank Ocean's Instagram now that he's made it public. And trying to find like little Easter eggs, like what the new music is going to be like, what headspace he's in right now. So I knew it was going to take a little extra attention for you today.
Do you think we get a Black Friday release? Maybe.
I'm hoping so. That's if the last 2 years are any indication.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
I'll probably buy anything that Frank Ocean puts out on Black Friday.
Yeah, I know that.
Most like valuable records in my record collection. Well, Blonde is like, I think the most valuable record that I own, that Black Friday release from 2 years ago, but there's no way I'm ever selling it.
Yeah. So he's got the like Blonde and was it Endless?
Endless, but Frank Channel Orange never been officially released on vinyl. So, that could be, he hinted about it on posting on somebody else's Instagram like earlier this year, a while ago, 8 or 9 months ago, that to be on the lookout for it. So maybe that's what we're going to see next week.
I'll be up in early checking.
The only thing I want more than that is a new Frank Ocean record, but we'll see. that'll come and it'll be what it is. So
yeah,
we'll be waiting on that. How you doing, man? You're doing okay up there in Portland? No snow, no fires?
No snow, no fires. Actually no rain, which is kind of interesting. It hasn't really rained yet. It's just
going
cold.
Going into the rain. It's cold. Okay.
But you guys, yeah. Speaking of fires, holy shit.
It's been scary. It's not a, it's not a great feeling to feel like, you know, you're about to be enveloped in flames, but definitely like thoughts and good wishes to everybody still dealing with that. Now it's better than it was a little while ago, but it's not a great situation.
Yeah. How far are you from the fires?
Well, I mean, not too far, but the Southern California ones are a lot more controlled than what's happening up north. So for a while, the smoke filled the skies, but now it's kind of back to normal over here. Far away, you know, far away from Malibu. I have to go check out my Malibu house later and make sure that, you know, everything's solid over there. But
yeah. So what have you been listening to?
And so much, you know, we're kind of like getting towards the end of the year, the release schedule has been a little bit lighter over the past few weeks. So I've been trying to catch up on some things, you know, with a lot of people anticipating our big end of the year wrap up. And I think we're both on record saying that we're going to wait, guys, till January, probably until we have our podcast, the best records of 2018, because the year won't be over until December 31st. And
I know
I've already seen some lists. Like it's barely even November and people are putting out lists. There's a whole month and a half to go. We got Good, Bad, and the Queen record, an Anderson .Paak record, Mariah Carey dropping a new album. I mean, all of these are going to be in contention for top 10. So, you know, we get to keep our ears open until the final stretch here.
Yeah, you got to wait, folks. I mean, you don't celebrate New Year's on Halloween.
And it's interesting, like, we can go back and look at our top 10 list from 2017 and see how that's even changed in the course of a year, you know, much less like when you're creating a list before the year is over.
I actually thought about my top 10 just a couple of days ago. Somebody at work asked for some nice music they could work to, you know, something non-distracting. So I tried to give him recommendations and the first thing that really popped into my head was Moses Sumney.
Oh, yeah.
Which was high on the list.
High on the list. I think that will remain. There will be a little bit of change in my top 10, but I think that will remain right there at the top for me from last year.
Yeah. And, you know, Slow Dive, still up there for me. So I'd be interested to take a look at what we put down.
Yeah, the Slow Dive album is great. I feel like they're still touring that record too, isn't that? Like, I guess when you break up for a long time, you have a lot of pent up energy to get back out on the road.
And we'll want to see you multiple times.
Yeah, or the festival economy has changed as such where you can make a lot of money if you just stay on the road.
It's very possible.
You're not making anything off records unless you're selling vinyl, which I think they have done a pretty good job of doing. But
they did a gray vinyl limited edition when they first released it.
Yeah, I missed out on that one.
Yeah, I got it.
But there has been, you know, the record release schedule has slowed down, although we have some really good stuff to talk to you guys about today. We have been going to see a lot of shows. It's not Rocktober anymore, but there has still been a lot of good music to go see live. And I know, Nick, that you and I both were able to catch the same show in the same week in LA and in Portland. Young Fathers doing a headlining tour, mostly larger cities on the East and West Coast. And then I think they have one show in Chicago. But the tour kicked off here last week in LA at the Fonda with Algiers opening, who I think are kind of like the perfect opening band for Young Fathers. They're like a little bit more rock oriented, but have a lot of the same kind of like sentiment and feeling behind the band. I like them. I just don't like them to the degree that I like Young Fathers. And this is my second time seeing them after a headlining show earlier this year at a much smaller venue here in LA. Nick, this was your first time catching Young Fathers live, right?
Yep, my first time.
And how was it?
Oh, it was amazing. I didn't know what to expect. And I think, you know, it'd be pretty cool to go to a show like Young Fathers, liking the music and not knowing what to expect from the live performance. But there was so much energy. I wish I could dance, you know, that way. And just so good live. I mean, their persona on stage and the drummer is just like the MVP of the whole performance, and they just sounded so good. And they played a lot of their repertoire. It felt like they played a lot of songs and.
Yeah, they played a surprising like amount of their earlier catalog. This is a group that haven't been around that long, or at least been in the public eye for that long. I think they've been together for a while, but you know, Coco Sugar is their release from this year and is, I think, definitely like their commercial breakout. You know, and they. Mm-hmm. They had so this is a three-piece group from Edinburgh, Scotland. All three are vocalists, singers, and rappers. Graham Hastings, one of the three, is primarily responsible for writing all the music. But live, they're augmented by a drummer who doesn't have like a typical drum kit, right? It's like floor toms that he's like beating on tribally, and he kind of has almost like choreographed movements. To me, he looked like late period Steve Jobs, you know, just younger, but like after he was sick. Who did you compare him to?
Strung Out Moby.
Oh yeah. Strung Out Moby. So, you know, he's somewhere looks wise is somewhere in between there, but their dynamic like stage presence, you know, two of the guys in the band are like quite tall and the third member is like half the size of them. And it's like this complete ball of energy.
And his hair is awesome.
Yeah, right? Incredible hair. And they kind of, you know, they also had a little bit more public exposure. I mean, I guess in the States a little bit with, I think five of their songs were used on the soundtrack to Trainspotting 2.
Yeah.
And they had an original song, Only God Knows, that is on that soundtrack as
well.
They
played that one live.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really good song. They won the Mercury Music Prize in the UK for their first official album, Dead. They were kind of critical darlings. And I found like I fell in love with Coco Sugar this year and, you know, had not really gotten into some of their earlier work. And now that I go back to it, it makes a lot more sense to me.
I totally agree. I did the same thing. I also, I enjoyed that the crowd, it seems like a lot of the crowd either knew them from before or did the same thing, because a lot of the crowd knew some of the earlier stuff too. Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to be kind of a cult band if they don't get really big.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I can't wait to see how they follow up Coco Sugar, because there was, you know, it was kind of a more concise, it's a very spare album, like with instrumentation wise, like the vocals are filling up a lot of the space and it's a lot more like concise and catchy, and just like, it's like a streamlined version of the Young Fathers sound, and I don't know where they go from there.
Yeah. Cocoa Sugar is such a good album. I think I texted you the other day before the show. I was like, I don't think I gave Cocoa Sugar enough attention when it first came out. And I've been blown away by the album recently, and especially the sequencing of songs. I just feel like it's such a well-sequenced album. And I think I was telling you the combination, like the back-to-back-to-back of Lord, Tremolo, and Wow. It's just like... I love that part of the album. And live, they played all three of those songs, and it was great. And Wild reminds me of a Radiohead song, actually.
I can see that.
Something Radiohead would have written, you know.
Well, it's like, that's like what, that's like sort of the middle part of the record, right? Mm-hmm. The sequence you're talking about right now?
Yeah.
And they, yeah. I think like, even there's no weak parts, like the album finishes really, really strong too.
Totally.
So it's like, it's kind of like, it's all killer.
One of their biggest singles is like second to last song, I think.
Yeah. Toy.
Yeah.
Maybe like that's the song they made a music video for and everything.
Yeah.
It was cool. Like seeing them, you know, I saw them in a very packed club, like 200 people, and the upgrade in 6 months has been, they added like 1,000 people to the capacity. They're going to a 1,200 person venue. That was pretty, I think it was like just about full here in LA. And they, last time they came through, they played that club show and actually opened for LCD Sound System and the Yeah Yeah Yeahs at the Hollywood Bowl for a 2-night stand. So they're kind of like, they were going from a 200 person club to an 18,000 person amphitheater. And now they're back in like a mid-sized club, and the crowd just seemed like, we were sitting up on the balcony and we could see the whole floor from there. And they were really into it. The energy was great.
I will say in Portland, it was at the Wonder Ballroom, which is about 1,000 people, I would say. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely not sold out. Like the balcony wasn't open.
That's a pretty big size room for them in Portland.
Yeah. And the energy, I think from where I was, wasn't as, it didn't match the energy on stage, if you will. Mm-hmm. Portland's kind of, and I've said that, you know, it takes a lot for that crowd to move, it feels like. Like that's why I think I was blown away by Idols a couple months ago. But yeah, I mean, I think towards the end, the crowd really started to get into it. But at the beginning, it was a little slow to get moving. And shout out to the four people next to me to my left that just wouldn't shut up during the show. That was really nice. Yeah.
What were they talking about?
I didn't even want to try to listen because I was trying to focus on the music. But during that song, during Lord, which is one of the quieter songs, like they were just as loud as the singer in my ear.
Mm.
And you could tell everybody around them was just like staring at them.
Well, it impresses me, like, all three of those guys in Young Fathers, all, like, I know that they can rap, but I'm, like, their singing is super impressive. All three of them. Like,
yeah.
They all have great voices, and it's, like, this cacophony of singing. Like, I noticed, like, the way they mix the vocals live, like, if you're just listening to a song, like, you might have G. Hastings on the left, like, doing a spoken word, like, really low pitched rap, and then somebody singing like a principal vocal melody, and the other guy kind of singing ad libs over it, mixed with this kind of spare electronic instrumentation, and then these crazy pounding drums live. It's like a sound that I had never experienced before. You can think of a lot of influences for it, but that combination, like a lot of people talk about Massive Attack because they kind of look like Massive Attack, and the makeup of the band and like the two tall guys and the short guy and even all that kind of thing. But sound wise, they did collaborate with them, but sound wise, they're not really very similar.
No. My friend that I went to the show with kind of, he was like, I get the Massive Attack. I also get some TV on the radio. So yeah, I love, you know, when I'd never seen them live, and it was, to your point, it was like they all three have incredible voices. And during the songs, I kept, you know, they were, every song there was a moment where I was like, oh, you're the one that sings that part. So like, it's kind of nice to see on stage who's actually doing what.
Yeah, now you go back to the record and you're like, oh, that's his voice, that's his voice, that's his voice. I kind of get, like, what member contributes what to the group.
Yeah, exactly. So I would say, you know, if you have a chance to catch Young Fathers either during this tour or a future tour, I totally would. It was, I mean, I'm going to go see them again for sure.
Yeah, this will not be the last time we talk about them in the next month or so, guaranteed. So we'll table a little more discussion about them for later. Other show, Nick, I got to see another favorite record of mine. One of my top albums of the year, definitely, is Be the Cowboy by Mitski, which we talked about a couple months ago. I think it came out in August. She came through L.A. with a date at the Wiltern, big old theater on Wilshire Boulevard. This was the last time she played here. She played the same venue as Young Fathers, the Fonda. So another artist kind of at least doubling the capacity of her audience here coming through. I think Be the Cowboy has been very strongly received. Nick, I was not prepared for the fandom that Mitski inspires. I really like her and have been a fan for a while. I had no idea her fan base was so rapt and devoted. And I had heard screams at this show like it was what's that Korean group called? BTS? It was like a BTS concert.
Yeah,
I heavily female fan base screaming the whole time, like screaming a lot. And you know, this is my first time seeing her live, and I had seen videos and I had seen photos of her on other tours. And, she is usually behind a guitar with her band. She ditched the guitar for every single song except for one that she played solo at the very end of the show, and had choreographed dances for every single song. 25 songs she played, because she has a lot of like fairly short songs, but she went the greater part of her discography. And you know, it was like, I never saw Kate Bush back in her heyday, but it reminded me like of what maybe a Kate Bush show would have been like. It was really a really remarkable show, and like just kind of announcing a young artist as like a really formidable talent who really likes, you know, the spotlight and is going to be around for a while, I think.
Oh, that's cool. Now you're making me regret selling that ticket.
Yeah, Nick was supposed to see Mitski the same week. We were like almost like double same shows in Portland and LA, but had to bow out of that one.
Yeah. So, but maybe next time, although I'm sure next time she'll be playing bigger and bigger venues.
I know. I think she has like a cult like audience, but it's starting to rub up against the mainstream. It's a big theater, and I couldn't believe what a forceful stage presence she was. She comes across kind of as like shy in some ways in interviews and things like that, but she was the furthest thing from that. Had some really cool screens as part of her stage setup, and really, like, I don't know if she's a trained dancer or if she just like has that in her, but it's really, really cool. I can't imagine what her tour is going to look like on her next record.
Yeah.
Or even what that record would sound like.
That's so awesome that she did the dancing. It sounds awesome.
Yeah, the whole time. Like, the whole show. It was slow song, fast song. Like, it was more of an interpretive dance style. It wasn't like, a Britney Spears kind of, like, choreographed up-tempo hip-hop style dance or anything like that. It was very abstract. Right. But still, I think people like really connect with her emotionally, like her fan base, I think. And you saw one other show too recently, right, Nick?
Yes. Speaking of Scottish bands, just like Young Fathers, I went to go check out one of my favorite bands, the Twilight Sad, who are doing this weird tour. They did it on before the release of their last album, where they do a few dates in the States months before their new record is going to come out. And they play a mixture of, you know, old favorites and a couple of new ones. And then, you know, their new album comes out on January 18th. And so I saw them in October, which feels kind of a ways away from when the record would come out. And they did drop that they would come back once the record dropped. But, you know, I've seen Twilight Sad countless times now, and I could go back every night. I even told myself this time that I would try to do, the next time they come, try to do Portland and Seattle. But I love this band, so they played, you know, some of my favorite songs, and obviously they played a couple new ones that sounded really good, made me really excited about this this new record. They changed their drummer about a year ago.
Mm.
Like in January, the drummer quit on, I think, just good terms. And so they have a new drummer, which was a new look. And I have to say that, you know, if you haven't seen the Twilight Sad, it's a very emotional show. I've never seen a performer like James, the lead singer, really.
Yeah, he's really unique.
It feels like he's quite possessed during the show. And it's almost like at the end of the show, you want to give him a hug, see if everything is okay. But this was a little more emotional because, you know, they were really close to Scott Hutchinson from Frightened Rabbits.
Yes.
And so they closed the show by covering a Frightened Rabbits song, Keep Yourself Warm, which James from Twilight Sad co-wrote with Scott Hutchinson, or at least sang the vocals on it. I don't know if he co-wrote it.
So what was like? What was the crowd like at the show? I mean, I'm just curious about what their fan base is like here, and what maybe would inspire them to do like an American, like a little American jaunt. I guess the record's done, right? Because it comes out in January, so there's usually a 3-month window for at least at this point for like even records to get pressed.
Yeah, and they just actually released a new single on Tuesday called VTR, which they played live, which sounded good. So the fan base is, that's a good, I'm glad you bring this up, because speaking of cold fan bases, they could do this every year and the same people would show up at the show.
Yeah.
And it's to the point where like people show up at the show hours before the show and bring presents.
Wow.
And they talk about them at every show, like, thanks for the gifts. Like people, first time I saw them in Portland, they played a in-store acoustic set before their set that night. And I went to go check them out at Music Millennium, one of the record stores here. And people showed up with like drawings and scarves they'd made, like just like crazy. A lot of people show up with whiskey.
Do you think that they have a connection to the Pacific Northwest also, like maybe more than some places? They seem like a band that would do really well in the Pacific Northwest.
I agree. Yeah, I think there's something... Like,
the autumnal vibe kind of that they have. And
yeah, there's something that, you know, is in their songs that feels like Northwest DNA a little bit. Maybe it's the Glasgow Scottish part of it, but you know, it can be quite miserable here, and they describe their music as miserable music. So
sounds like a great time.
Yeah,
I got to see them, you know, I talked about it, I think, earlier this year. I saw them in Porto at the Primavera Festival in Porto. I guess they played in Barcelona too, but I probably missed that one. I got to see the whole set like right up front, and not being like that familiar with their music, I thought it was really, really great. Like really good live band. And I've been meaning to kind of dig back into, you know, their earlier work, because I'm sure I'm going to like it. I just haven't got the chance to explore it too in depth yet, but really enjoyed seeing them live.
Yeah, it's one of those shows. They're coming back. I can't wait. I forgot I'd taken my wife to one of the shows, and I was like, "You've never seen them. You gotta come." And she's like, "I've seen them."
She's like, "I've seen them six times."
but yeah, you know, to go back to the performance, I've cried a few times at shows, but I cried this time, and because, you know, when they closed with the Frightened Rabbit song, like he couldn't even sing the song anymore, like, you know, he was crying while he was singing, and it was quite something to witness. And obviously, like, they didn't come back for an encore after that.
Yeah, you can't really.
Yeah,
and all the best bands don't do encores anyway. Young Fathers didn't do an encore, right?
Idols didn't either.
Yeah,
I think I was talking about it the other day. I think encores are, you know, I feel like they're pointless now. People just get off stage for literally 20 seconds and come back on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The Manic Street Preachers have done that forever, and I always like that because it's such a like performative thing. I guess on a show, like a big arena show or something, I kind of like an encore, like when people are, when there's like so much anticipation, but there's something to be said for like just slaying it and then, you know, burning the place down and getting out of there.
Yeah, agreed.
So when are they coming back? After the new record's out, I assume.
I'm guessing around February, March. I don't know if they'll get booked for any festivals though, so we'll see. But, you know, I'm really looking forward to the record. January 18th, you know, it's going to be a big record day. You got Twilight Sad, then you Deer Hunter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Deer Hunter just put out a single. We were talking about it before Death in Midwinter. And all thoughts out to Deer Hunter. Their former bass player passed away last week. Yeah. You know, up in, I think he was the bass player up through the Monomania sessions. And that was a bit of sad news to hear. So
it was.
Also, thoughts with them. I can't wait for new Deer Hunter music, like always.
Yeah.
Kind of like a, what do you say about their new song? It kind of has like a more of an Americana sort of sound to it a little bit, as much as Deer Hunter can be.
Yeah, I think it's pretty in line with their last release, though.
Fading Frontier. Yeah. It was much more like accessible or kind of like typical kind of songwriting going on there, which I really like that album. Not my favorite Deer Hunter album by any stretch, but
what is your favorite Deer Hunter album?
I don't know. I was putting together just yesterday or the day before a list of my favorite records from 2007. I like to do this exercise from time to time, and that was a stacked year. You know, not it, like the top, my top like 10 or 12 albums are all like killer. And then it really dropped off from there. There's like not a whole lot of also rans, but the top ones, like, you know, I had In Rainbows listed number one because In Rainbows has become my favorite Radiohead album. So I couldn't really list that. And if you know, my list of albums from 2007 that I made at the end of 2007, In Rainbows was definitely not number one.
Okay.
But in the time that's passed, it's become, this is a complete tangent, but it's become like, I don't know. It's like they're a perfection of Radiohead sound to me. And it's not as iconic as like Kid A or OK Computer, but it's just like perfect, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then I had Cryptograms as number two. Deer Hunter's, I guess it's their second album with the Fluorescent Gray EP that came out the same year.
EP. That's a great
EP. Is amazing. And like, but I don't know. I mean, it's between Cryptograms, Microcastle, and Halcyon Digest. So, I mean, yeah, I can narrow it down to three. I would probably go for Halcyon if I had to, which I think is kind of the standard kind of fans favorite Deer Hunter album. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's Halcyon for me. Then Microcastle, then probably Cryptograms.
And Cryptograms I really like just because of how like how diverse it is. Like the first half of the album is basically like a cranky the record label, I mean, which they were on originally, like ambient, like drone release. And then the second half of the album is kind of where you start to hear Deer Hunter that we get to know over the next few records and like just really good songs.
Yeah.
And then Fluorescent Gray was like four like really great songs. So
they also had that, I don't know if it's the same, like that Rainwater Cassette Exchange EP.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good five-song EP.
Yeah, is that? I think that was between Microcastle and Halcyon Digest,
yeah,
right? Yeah. Yeah, that is really great. They play, at least on the last tour, they were playing Rainwater Cassette Exchange, like the track, but like a really reworked version of it that was super cool. I have no idea what to expect from them, you know, on the next tour or anything, but it's like part of the reason why following Deer Hunter is so fun.
Yeah. Going back to that new single, I like the harpsichord. Kate LeBon plays it. And I guess she produced most of the album.
Yeah. They were working with each other and there was talk of like a collaborative album between Bradford Cox and Kate LeBon. Mm-hmm. But, I don't know. I would love to hear anything from that collaboration. You know, I'm a really big fan of hers too, and actually been listening to her quite a bit the last month or so.
Nice. Nice.
Especially Mug Museum, her first album.
Well, I'm really looking forward to this Deer Hunter album. So I'm sure right around, right after we do our top 10 list, that that record will drop. And
right.
We'll see if it's a contender for 2019.
Yeah, you're going to have to keep that one in the books for the whole year. It's funny when things like that happen. Like I was looking at that same year, 2007, the first release by Good, Bad, and the Queen, the Damon Albarn project that just released the second album, like right now, was released in January of 2017.
That was on your list too, right?
That was about number four or five. There was like that year also had Boxer by The National and, oh, yeah. And Sound of Silver by LCD Sound System.
Never heard of it.
They were like kind of seminal releases from groups that kind of define that decade in music, really. So it was a stacked year, but yeah, as lame as it is, I had to put In Rainbows as number one.
I don't think it's lame. I mean, it's a fantastic album. Probably one of the best of the 2000s.
Yeah. And I got to see like that tour before In Rainbows came out where they played a lot of the songs before recording them, where they were like playing new music and everything at smaller venues. So, So that was cool. Shout out also to, in terms of big bands, I did get to see Arctic Monkeys play the Hollywood Bowl a little while ago. I don't think I talked about this on the last podcast with Mini Mansions and Lemon Twigs opening. I won't talk about this long. We just wanted to say those probably I've seen them in different size venues. I've seen the show from every single album they released, except for AM, actually, except for like the massive one.
Oh, yeah.
They played some festivals and they sold out the Staples Center, but I didn't go to that show. But Hollywood Bowl, two sold out nights, best Arctic Monkeys show I've ever seen. And I was kind of shocked at how good they are. And this is, we're like about 5 months since the last time I saw them headline Primavera, and the new songs already sound like old, like classics. And it's kind of hard to believe that there was a time where we were like, is this new direction for Arctic Monkeys, this album, going to alienate their fan base? Mm-hmm. No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
That's awesome.
In fact, you know, it's probably one of the best things they've ever done. So.
It is. I mean, that album still holds up. I still listen to it all the time.
Yeah. So that will be, I'm sure that record will come up in a few weeks when we get towards the end of the year. But we have some new things to talk about this week.
Yes, we do. We do.
Really exciting things. I feel like it's been, you know, the release schedule has been a little slow lately, but there's been some really good records that have come out. And for me, like a lot of kind of pop-oriented albums. Electronic pop, you know, not super mainstream, most of these records, but I want to talk about a few of them. But the main one I want to talk about, because I just think everything about this record is kind of remarkable, is Honey by Robin. Robin, a lot of people remember her as she was signed to Jive Records in the late 90s, just before Britney Spears. And she's from Sweden, worked with Max Martin, just like Britney Spears and everybody, well, people still working with Max Martin to this day. He's still making hits. But she was kind of part of that Swedish pop factory. And I think kind of Britney kind of came out and stole her thunder. And she was never like as mainstream as Britney. And she had like some songs that, you know, were pretty big hits. Came back with an album that wasn't, she had like a lot of trouble getting out of, I think, her deal at Jive Records. But cut to like 2009, 2010, she comes back with these. It was 2010. She came out with a few EPs called Body Talk that really solidified her as this, like, you know, alternate pop star, you know, not super mainstream pop star that writes her own songs and does her own thing completely. And it was one of my like favorite things that came out that year. And one of the best pop releases, I think, of the millennium so far. A lot of people know like the song Dancing on My Own, which was featured prominently on the show Girls. I think it was like the last scene of one of the seasons. Yeah. A lot of people got to know that, but like every like party I went to around this period of time was Robin was always playing.
Yeah, that album, I think, you know, I think at the time it was like Pitchfork put it as their number two album of the year.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't surprise me.
And I think number one was My Dark Twisted Fantasy or something like that. Yeah, Robin, Body Talk's an amazing album. And I think as a pop star, she's amazing. Like I'm fascinated by Robin. And actually I really regret, there was one year we went to FYF and the Black Madonna was playing, the DJ,
mm-hmm.
and Robin showed up as a
guest. That's right.
On stage. I wish I'd seen that, but I've never seen Robin live, but you know, I'd really like to.
Yeah. Well, now she's back, like with her first album in 8 years. I mean, if you call Body Talk an album, they did compile some of the best songs into like a single album length release. But this is her first album in 8 years called Honey. And Nick, did you read much about like her process with writing and recording this album? Because it's really interesting.
I didn't.
So she's had a rough period. I mean, it's been, like what I was saying, 8 years since we've seen new music from her. She had a musical partner who she's worked with for a long time pass away. And also the kind of dissolving of a long-term romantic relationship. And that's kind of where she started with this album. And she wrote the album in the order that it's sequenced on the record. It was like written and recorded. So the first song that she wrote from this period is Missing You, which is the first song on the album. And this is kind of, you know, directed towards those that, you know, what she's been losing, like the love and the partnership that she lost. But you see, if you listen to this album, it starts like, you know, in kind of a sad contemplative place and then becomes a lot more fun and almost like silly towards the end of the record. I think of like Beach 2K20 is like such a weird song towards the end of the album. But it's like fun and it's Robin being, you know, like nobody else, like only she could have done a song like that. But she rekindled that romance a few years later. And you can kind of, you hit like, I think around the time, like Honey, the title track is about in the middle of the album, probably like somewhere around that time. And it's just a complete like journey from front to back. And it, you know, it starts kind of sad and it ends pretty happy. And you kind of see the evolution of the last almost decade of her life right there in the music. I think she would work on a song, like write it, record it, and then move on to whatever she had next.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fascinating. Not many people do that.
I know. And when I listen to the album thinking about that, it becomes much richer to me. But I should ask you, I mean, what did you think about this album?
I love this album. I haven't stopped listening to it. I think I listened to it at least once a day since it came out. It's fantastic because it's the best elements of pop in the pure term of like you could see any of these songs be super popular, but every song is actually quite complex. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know which song is my favorite on this album. Like I love, love, love this album. I listened to it the first time and I sent it to my wife and I said, this is your new favorite album. it's fantastic. I mean, Missing You is like, it almost feels like a club banger. I love Human Being.
Mm-hmm. That's a great song.
I was obsessed with that song for a while. Baby Forgive Me, love that song. Honey, title track.
Honey is amazing. If that's not my favorite song on the album, it's like number two.
And then Ever Again like is such a great closer. And it feels like this album almost feels like a movie where like there's like a beginning and an end.
Definitely.
And you feel like at the end something maybe hopeful is happening. Almost like not like a Hollywood ending, but like a kind of a happy ending in a way.
It's like if you think there's like not, if you've never been touched by like emotional depth in pop music, like this, check out this album because it's really meaningful and I don't know, just deep. I mean, it's emotional and it resonates beyond it, but it also make you like dance and feel.
Yeah.
Nobody feels like she has a way, and she did it on the Body Talk EPs, of like writing songs that are simultaneously sad and make you dance and also make you feel like they get you in touch with those emotions, like those sad feelings. But at the end of them, you feel resilient and like ready to conquer the world, you know?
I also like, if you've never heard of Robin and this is your first introduction and you're hearing this podcast describing this album, it's really hard to explain how this is like pop music, pop, but it's very different than, like, on the surface it might not be, but when you listen to it, it's actually really different than the regular pop you might be accustomed to. Mm-hmm. And I think, I wonder if I want everybody to listen to this, listen to it with an open mind, because I think everybody will get hooked.
Yeah, I was like, it kind of took me by surprise. I knew Robin was putting out something, but it had been so long, and she went like dark during those years, like wasn't really putting out anything. And so my expectations, I guess, I don't know why I didn't feel like I was doubting her, but I guess I didn't expect her to come back with something like this, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, for what it is, it's just about perfect. There's nothing about it I would change.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. Did you buy the vinyl?
No, I don't think it's out yet.
Yeah, I'm looking for it.
But she did she did announce some tour dates. I know she's playing at the Palladium here in February, I believe.
Did you get your tickets?
Not yet. I got to do that. I got to get on that. Yeah. See if I can. Somebody.
Those are gonna go fast. I'm surprised. I would be surprised if they're still available.
They might be going on sale today in like 20 minutes or something. But all right, guys, I'm gonna go. Sorry. Yeah. Oh, what about Between the Lines? That's also my jam.
Oh, like, great song. Great song. Yeah. Oh man, like I kind of want to hang up and listen to this album now. I was thinking, like, after listening to it for a week, and I don't know how this doesn't make it in my top 10.
Yeah, it really. I haven't had. I know I really, really like something when I stop myself from listening to it too much, because it's like all I want to listen to. I've actually taken like a break from this record for a little while, so I'm ready to put it back on. Great cooking, great cleaning, doing things around the house. Because like I said, it'll move you. Like it'll put you in a good mood, but it might put you in touch with some emotions that you weren't expecting from this kind of music.
Yeah. No, I agree. Definitely move you. And you're right. You're totally right about, like, you can do anything to this album, but you'll always do it dancing.
Exactly. I'm so glad you liked this album, because I was going to be just really sad if you didn't.
Yeah. No, I love this album. I'm actually looking at tickets in Seattle for this show.
It's in February, right? She's doing
March 1st is our show in Seattle, yeah.
March 1st, okay.
And tickets do go on sale in about 24 minutes.
There you go. So everybody, when you're listening to this, you missed out.
Yeah.
Or maybe, I think she's doing, like, she's playing some smaller markets and everything, so maybe it won't be too hard to get tickets some places. I wouldn't be surprised if she's backed for a victory lap or possibly some more dates around Coachella.
There's definitely a festival coming.
Yeah.
Although, you know, it's going to be interesting because if she's playing in LA so close to Coachella, I don't know what the rules are anymore, but
I think it's before Coachella's lineup has been announced, so I think she's good, but those rules, I don't know. SZA took Golden Voice to court over some of Coachella's rules about mileage and dates that you can play around that time, so I don't know exactly what the status of that is.
Yeah.
I do know if I were to perhaps have a daughter sometime in the future, I think Robin would be great music to introduce to them. And she's like, she seems like a great role model to me.
Well, there's a reason it's been playing nonstop as well. Tessa, my daughter, likes it.
She digs it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That's great. Well, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say not as much as Idols, but
she's a punk first and foremost.
She is.
Yeah, definitely.
Slow Dive last year and Idols this year.
Idol's another band that is coming back through playing a bigger room soon. So hopefully I'll be able to catch that show at least.
Yeah.
Well, we'll go beyond a little bit, like talk about a few other records that have come out in the last few weeks. Sort of in the vein of Robin, you know, maybe not as, maybe that won't reach as wide of an audience as Robin will like all over the world. But, there's been a few cool like pop releases. Nick, you were mentioning you were listening to the new Empress Of record.
Yes. Yes. I believe that one's called Us.
Yeah.
I like it. I really like the single I Don't Even Smoke Weed. I think that's one of the best songs of the year. And I really like Empress Of. I've liked all her collabs.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's really good as a feat, you know. Mm-hmm. I listened to Me once or twice when it came out, her first album.
Yeah.
And I like Us, this new one, a lot better, I think. It's not as introspective as Me. I think she's just a real talent.
You know, Me came out, I listened to Me a lot when it came out and I liked it. And it was one of those things where it was like so in the moment for me, like I listened to it for a period of time. And then I didn't really go back to it a lot in the intervening mm-hmm. years. And it was kind of surprised me, I guess, because the world moves so fast. It's only been, I think this is about 3.5 years after her first album, but it felt like a long time. Like when I saw that she had this new record out, I thought maybe there was one in between that I had missed, but I think she was, like you were saying, she was doing a lot of collaborations and she works, from what I understand, like on her music, mostly like solo. So, you know, her process might take her a while. She's like I think she grew up in LA. She's Honduran American, but went to Berklee School of Music in Boston and is like a real, like very proficient musician.
Yeah. She sings both in English and Spanish. And you know, great pop music again, that kind of pop music I love. So I would recommend Us and then check out Me if you never have, but Empress Of, won't be obviously the last time you'll hear about her. She's going to do great things, I'm sure.
Great. So Empress Of, and then a couple other records to check out. I have really fallen for this record, Premonitions by Maya Folick. I think I'm saying her name right. This is a debut album, singer-songwriter. She is, I believe she's on Interscope Records, so she's a major label artist. She put out a couple EPs over the last few years. Right now, she's actually touring with Pale Waves as an opening act. But she is, I think she grew up here in Los Angeles, and this is her first album, and it's just like, it doesn't have the conceptual, like, power of Honey by Robin, but in terms of a collection of songs, it's really like great. Every single song on this album is great, especially the first track is called Thingamajig, and it's a hit in the making. I think like it's going to be played like over the last scene of the last of the season finale of like Grey's Anatomy or something, and then it's going to become a huge hit. It's like it's got that kind of weepy. It reminds me even a little bit of like something like Run by Snow Patrol or like something like, it's like a grand ballad. But just like really her vocals are really outstanding. And I just like everything about her. You know, I think it's just a remarkable album.
Awesome. Awesome. I don't think I've listened to it yet, but it's on my list.
Yeah, check it out. It really surprised me. I was like, it's a lot more like fun than I expected it to be too. Even like parts of it even remind me of like peak Shania Twain. Okay. It's not like country at all, but it's like, it's kind of like, there's like some silly, like kind of fun, like pop stompers on there. So, and speaking of that, one other recommendation, this group Audiobooks, this is a British group. It's a duo, between a very young singer and a much older producer. He looks like, his name is David Rynch. He looks like, who's that guy? Edgar Winter, like that guitar player who did that Frankenstein song in the 70s, like long white hair.
Yeah.
And her name is Evangeline Ling. The closest thing I could think of to describe it, something that we've talked about in the last year, is Let's Eat Grandma. And I think he actually, David Wrench, worked on that record quite a bit.
Well, I listened to this audiobooks record.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did. I did listen to it. This album is crazy.
It's crazy. This is an album, unlike Honey, that I'm not approved to play at all times in my house.
Yeah, this album is crazy. I think I need to spend more time with it, but again, like, I don't know what's going on.
Like, it almost sounds like Tessa recorded an album or something like that. Like, her youthful energy, because she's very young, Evangeline Ling. I think she's like 20 or 21 in it. Like, lyrically and vocally and melodically, it sounds like something like a little kid could have come up with.
Yeah. And this is a compliment, by the way.
There's a song, I think my favorite song on the album is probably, there's a song about taking platonic bubble baths called Friends in the Bubble Bath. And it's about taking bubble baths, but nothing sexy, she says in the song. Just friends taking a bubble bath together. And it's like a pop banger. I mean, it really does remind me a lot of Let's Eat Grandma, but maybe a little less like spooky and psychedelic and a little bit just more like quirky and energetic. Actually, this was Rough Trade's album of the month. So they just sent it to me with no warning. And so I've been listening to it like even more than I would have.
That's Huddle's.
Oh yeah.
Album called Parcels.
I have not checked this out.
Yeah. I think your brother texted you and I and said, make this, I think this is music you would like.
Was he right?
He wasn't wrong. the Parcels kind of claim to fame. They're a band from Australia that moved to Berlin. But they released a single last year over, I think it's called Overnight, or 2 years ago, that was released by a French clothing brand called Maison Kitsune. I'm actually wearing one of their sweaters today. So they're kind of a fashion brand that also releases music. And they became famous because that record, that single was produced by Daft Punk.
Yeah, I remember when that song came out.
Yeah. So then you can imagine that it sounds a little bit like Daft Punk, but a little more towards the random access memory side of things, which is a good thing. I mean, all Daft Punk is good. But their debut album is very much in that vein. I don't know if it was produced by Daft Punk, but it's really good. I was actually pleasantly surprised. It's the only knock I'll give it is that sometimes it's a little too close to Daft Punk. I think they're extremely skilled, and I can't wait to see them live. They're touring. They have announced a tour a few months ago now, because I saw these tickets online for a while, but they're playing in March, around March on our coast. But now that tour may be in July. Kind of weird, but anyway, I would recommend it. If anything I talked about in those few sentences is interesting to you, I would check it out. Parcels, that is. And I could see them really blowing up too. And I wonder if, you know, they're announcing those March dates because of the festival season.
Well, there is a Daft Punk hole in the universe. So like, if you're
a daft hole.
So you're saying like they sound a lot like Daft Punk, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's like Daft Punk isn't really like a going concern a lot of the time. So, you know, people are kind of hungry for that kind of music.
Yeah. And then the last thing, the last band I want to mention is this Japanese band, all girl band called Chai, named after the tea, I believe. And they're just really quirky and play awesome Japanese kind of punk music. I added it to my Apple Music and tell you the story, and was listening to them. And then I came home to find my wife and daughter just just dancing around the living room to Chai because we share the Apple Music, and it's super youthful, super fun. I think I saw an article about them talking about wearing the color pink in Japan and how that's reserved for little girls, and so they make it a point to just wear pink. But the music is really interesting. It's not just straightaway punk. It's got some interesting elements, and I think pushes the genre in certain ways, especially a four-piece female-fronted Japanese punk band.
Yeah, that's unique.
So yeah, I expect that, you know, they'll have more things to say, and I'm going to keep listening to them for sure.
Well, in that same vein, never mind. I was about to say something that was not in that same vein at all. For those of you who enjoyed our interview earlier this year with C. Tangana, just let you know, give a quick update on his global domination. He just put out a song with a Mexican-American singer, Becky G, and a video. Song is called Booty.
Okay.
You can imagine what the video is like. But look that up if you're interested in seeing what our boy's up to. I had a feeling when I interviewed him back in Primavera early this year that it wouldn't be too long before he started to make his mark in the States, especially with like as large of a Spanish language audience as we have here. But this is like a bilingual song. This is really like a bid for attention on this side of the ocean. So we'll see how that goes for him. If you wanted to know what a song, a C. Tangana song with some English in it would sound like, now's your chance. So check out Booty.
Awesome. I'll check it out right now.
Are you at work? I don't know. No.
All right.
Yeah, man. Well, guys, I hope you guys enjoyed the love language interview. A couple other things coming up here before the end of the year. Everybody's hotly anticipating the top 10 albums of 2018 already. We're getting some questions about that. Please take a moment, rate and review us. iTunes, right, Nick?
Yeah, iTunes. I think that's all. iTunes, Stitcher. Don't forget to follow us on the Twitter, on the Facebook, on Instagram, all the things. And of course, email us if you have any comments or any suggestions. juiceboxmusicpod@gmail.com.
Get it. All right. And we really thank you guys for listening. We're almost like a year into this. So still plugging away and talking about new music. And it kind of gets us excited to talk about new records when we get engagement from other people. So, anytime you want to give us a shout, anybody wants to give us a call and tell us about their favorite albums of the year, or give us any recommendations, we'd love that too.
For sure.
All right, Nick. Well, until next time.
Talk to you later.
Later, Andy.